Everybody, it's been a long time since we've talked. This is Eric Mann. You're on Voices from the Front Lines. It is Nina Simone singing. It's been years since we've been gone. So it hasn't been years, but it's been weeks. Today's show is going to be about the U.S. aggression against the people and the government of Venezuela. It's serious stuff. It's the counter-revolution of our time. Many of us have read about the Allende coup with great pain, but it's U.S. imperialism. It does it every day, and it's very, very scary that one of the most exciting revolutions in the world is being challenged by the United States government. On the positive is the United States government has been trying to topple the Cuban Revolution since 1959 and has been unsuccessful. And I think we should be clear that the people of Venezuela and the people of Latin America and the people of the world will defeat the United States, which is not just saying it. It's true. And that's a great tribute to the people of Venezuela. So what we're going to do today is I'm going to be on the phones and in the conversation with Manuel Criollo. He's the director of organizing at the Labor Community Strategy Center. We've been friends and comrades for a long time. We both went to Venezuela in an amazing experience to witness the first re-election of Hugo Chavez, which I'll tell you a little about. So here's what I'm planning to do with the show today. The first thing is I'm just going to read a lot of stuff because I need to understand it better. I'm going to read the Obama lie paper that is going to come from the State Department, so we're going to explain the rationale. Then I'm going to read a fact sheet from Ava Golinger, who's a terrific journalist and friend of participant in the Venezuelan Revolution. Then I'm going to read a couple of other things, and then Manuel and I are going to talk for a while. We'd like you to both tweet me during the show at Eric Mann Speaks. And you know at Voices from the Frontlines, we focus a lot on what are people going to do. We don't have a clear connection yet with calls to the White House and specific actions. So I'm going to be asking you to write me at eric@voicesfromthefrontlines.com, both because we'd like to hear your response to the show, and to indicate that you're interested in doing something for U.S. hands-off Venezuela. We're not going to be leading such a movement, but we could be a clearinghouse for friends of Voices from the Frontlines, and we will both, when the White House website is up again, the president's claiming it's down for repairs, forward your letter to the president, and also we will get back to you personally about other groups that are doing work and how you can help. But I think in the next week it's really critical that the world movement let the United States know that this blatant effort to interfere in the internal affairs of a sovereign country, which the United States never respects, and to try to overthrow a very amazingly progressive government is going to meet with tremendous opposition inside the United States. I'm going to read first from the White House Office, the Press Secretary for Immediate Release. It's called Fact Sheet, Venezuela Executive Order. President Obama today issued a new executive order declaring a national emergency with respect to the unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security and foreign policy of the United States posed by the situation in Venezuela. The targeted sanctions in the executive order implement the Venezuela Defense of Human Rights and Civil Society Act of 2014, which the president signed on December 18, 2014, and also go beyond the requirements of this legislation. We're committed, this is the statement, I just want to be clear since I'm reading it, of the president of the United States, not me. We're committed to advancing respect for human rights, safeguarding democratic institutions, and protecting the U.S. financial system from the illicit financial flows from public corruption in Venezuela. The new authority is aimed at persons involved in or responsible for the erosion of human rights guarantees, persecution of political opponents, curtail of press freedoms, use of violence and human rights violations, and abuses in response to anti-government protests, arbitrary arrest and detention of anti-government protesters, as well as significant public corruption by senior government officials in Venezuela. The executive order does not target the people or the economy of Venezuela. Specifically, the executive order targets those determined by the Department of Treasury in consultation with the Department of State to be involved in, first, actions or policies that undermine democratic processes or institutions, significant acts of violence or conduct that constitute a serious abuse or violation of human rights, including against persons involved in anti-government protests in Venezuela in or since February 2014, actions that prohibit, limit, or penalize the exercise of freedom of expression or peaceful assembly, or public corruption by senior officials within the government of Venezuela. The executive order also authorized the Department of Treasury, in consultation with the Department of State, to target any person determined to, one, to be a current or former leader of an entity that has, or whose members have, engaged in any activity described in the executive order, or an entity whose property and interest in property are blocked or frozen pursuant to the executive order, or to be a current or former official of the government of Venezuela. Individuals designated or identified for the imposition of sanctions under this executive order, including the seven individuals that have been listed today in the annex, will have their property and interest in property in the United States blocked or frozen, and the U.S. persons are prohibited from doing business with them. The executive order also suspends the entry into the United States of individuals meeting the criteria for economic sanctions. We will continue to work closely with others in the region to support greater political expression in Venezuela and to encourage the Venezuelan government to live up to its shared commitment as articulated in the OAS Charter, Organization of American States, the Inter-American Democratic Charter, and other relevant instruments related to democracy and human rights. Then it says the president imposed sanctions on the following seven individuals listed in the annex: Antonio José Benavides Torres, Gustavo Enrique González López, Justo José Noguera Pietri, Catherine Nayariz Harrington Padrón, Manuel Eduardo Pérez Urdaneta, Manuel Gregorio Bamal Martínez, Miguel Acides Vivas Landino, Inspector General, last one, Inspector General of Venezuela's Bolivarian National Armed Forces and former command of the strategic region of the integral defense of the Andes region of Venezuela's Bolivarian National Armed Forces. So let's talk about this. First thing is that we don't want to be clever. Intellectually, it defies almost any sense of logic, but U.S. imperialism is so dishonest, so brutal, that behind all this high-handed conversation, the first thing, of course, is the question of sovereignty. What in the world is the United States doing discussing human rights in Venezuela as if this is, as it says here, which is a national emergency with respect to the unusual, extraordinary threat to the national security and foreign policy of the United States posed by the situation? So a lot of you who are in your homes right now, I know you're terrified of this threat to your security and sovereignty and this imminent invasion from the Venezuelan people. It's also very interesting how much is being discussed after they discuss human rights, that a great deal of this is about the protection of U.S. property. It's rare that the United States will integrate its discussion of human rights with the protection of U.S. assets in Venezuela. It should be obvious that any revolution in the world is going to start by seizing the assets of the imperialist countries that have been violating their sovereignty, hurting their economy. The Cubans, when they had their revolution, they seized U.S. property and agreed to pay the United States based on the assessed valuation of the property that the United States companies had claimed they were worth. So obviously, when the revolution came to power and agreed to compensate the United States for virtually pennies on the dollar, that led to the efforts to overthrow the government. So it's very important that human rights and property rights in the United States are interchangeable. It's also very interesting that a lot of us in the Strategy Center have been trying to get President Obama to issue an executive order, as you know, to overthrow the government of the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, which has been violating our civil rights, and to certainly put them under Title VI of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. He refused. We asked the president to issue an executive order to place the Sanford Police Department under Justice Department supervision because of the murder of Trayvon Martin. He's refused. The president doesn't issue a lot of executive orders, but the fact that there's a law in the United States, that's shocking. The Venezuela Defense of Human Rights and Civil Society Act of 2014, what that means is that the United States Congress actually passed a law about human rights in Venezuela with $5.5 million to back it up. Can you imagine if Venezuela passed a law and spent $5 million to send people into the United States for defense of freedom? Now, actually, I'm going to hop ahead to a couple of other thoughts here, because there's not yet, I asked Manuel Criollo, who's on the line with me, if the Venezuelan government had put out a statement yet. And it hasn't, but it says, in terms of an article about it, it says, the Venezuelan government has charged the U.S. government with hypocrisy on the issue of human rights, and in particular, the mass repression and incarceration of Afro-descendant communities in the U.S. We'll come back to that. On February 28th, President Maduro announced new measures imposing a reciprocal travel visa requirements on U.S. citizens seeking to enter Venezuela, as well as mandating a reduction in U.S. embassy staff to levels that match the number of Venezuelan personnel in Washington. Maduro also announced the creation of an anti-terrorist list of individuals barred from entering Venezuela, which will include former U.S. officials such as George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, who have reportedly, quote, committed human rights violations. Venezuelan Foreign Minister Delcy Rodriguez has confirmed that the Bolivarian government will soon issue an official response to the order. So a couple of thoughts, and then Manuel and I are going to talk after I do read the fact sheet from Ava Golinger. How you doing, Manuel?
Good, Eric.
So a couple of things. The Strategy Center has initiated a campaign called the Fight for the Soul of the Cities, which is our effort to try to develop a more coherent political frame. And one of the central tenets is called Stop U.S. Drone Attacks, Support for Sovereignty and Human Rights All Over the World. Now, in terms of the idea of a demand in a program, we could have put in Stop U.S. Attacks on the Sovereignty of People All Over the World, which we did. We could have said close down all the 800 bases all over the world, which we believe. We could have said cut the U.S. military budget by 90%, which we believe. So Stop U.S. Drone Attacks, Support for Sovereignty and Human Rights is a placeholder for a broader conversation about that the President of the United States does not just issue executive orders. The President of the United States assassinates and murders people. The President of the United States sits down with a GPS, sits down with the CIA and says, just like they have targeted seven individuals on this list, I'm very serious that we have to understand that the next step might be the targeting of those seven individuals for assassination by the United States. So we have our work cut out for us. We're trying to really build a movement in the United States. I need you to tweet me at Eric Mann Speaks and send me your emails and desire to get involved in a hands-off Venezuela campaign to Eric@voicesfromthefrontlines.com, Eric@voicesfromthefrontlines.com. Again, we're not leading such a movement, but we want to be a clearinghouse for friends of Voices from the Frontlines, friends of the Strategy Center, who say, yes, use my email, hook me up with other groups that are doing this work. As we get clearer, we will do that, and there will be at least something we can do. And, of course, if there are and when there are demonstrations about hands-off Venezuela, certainly the Strategy Center, I think Voices listeners will be there. So I'm just going to end with, since it says fact sheet from the executive order of the United States, I want to get the person whose facts I look to, which is Ava Golinger, who Manuel and I met in Venezuela, and then the Strategy Center organized a program for her when she came to Los Angeles. This is really important stuff, and again, it's things I did not know. You're on Voices from the Frontlines. This is Eric Mann. You're on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 2011 to 2015. President Obama authorizes a special fund of $5 million in his annual budget to support anti-government groups in Venezuela. In 2015, Obama increases this amount to $5.5 million. The NED, National Endowment for Democracy, which is a U.S. front group, continues to fund anti-government groups in Venezuela with about $2 million annually. Each year, the U.S. government includes Venezuela on a list of countries that do not cooperate with counter-narcotics efforts of the War on Terror. Also, in its annual human rights report, the State Department classifies Venezuela as a violator of human rights. Subsequent to President Chavez's death from cancer on March 5, 2013, new elections are held and Nicolas Maduro wins the presidency. Opposition leaders hold violent demonstrations that result in the deaths of more than a dozen people. In February 2014, the violent protests resume, led by Leopoldo Lopez and Maria Corina Machado, who openly call for the overthrow of President Maduro, and over 40 people are killed. Lopez turns himself into authorities and faces charges for his role in the violence. The U.S. government calls for his immediate release. January 2015, Vice President Joe Biden warns Caribbean countries that the government of President Nicolas Maduro will soon be, quote, defeated, and therefore they should abandon their discounted oil program with Venezuela, Petrocaribe. February 2015, President Obama unveils his new national security strategy and names Venezuela as a threat and stresses support for Venezuelan citizens living in a country where democracy is risked. Then, days later, a coup plot against President Maduro is thwarted and 10 active Venezuelan military officers are detained. Antonio Ledezma is arrested and charged with conspiracy to overthrow the government, and the U.S. State Department issues a state condemnation of his detention, calling on regional governments to take action against the Maduro administration. And finally, White House spokesman Josh Earnest denies any U.S. government role in the coup attempt against Maduro, calling such allegations ludicrous, but further reveals, quote, the Treasury Department and State Department are considering tools that may be available that could better steer the Venezuelan government in the direction that we believe they should be headed. This is from Ava Gollinger, the author of The Chavez Code, and also an amazing blog called Postcards from the Revolution. You can tweet me at Eric Mann Speaks, and please send us emails, eric@voicesfromthefrontlines.com. Manuel Kiyoyo, welcome to Voices from the Frontlines.
Thanks, Eric.
Well, obviously, when you and I went to Venezuela, you'll have to tell me when that was. You were my leader, really. We read the Chavez Code together, written by Ava Gollinger. You've studied Venezuela. You think a lot about Latin American revolutions. What's some of your response to the particular developments today?
I mean, I think the hypocrisy of the president speaking about human rights violations, the threats of human rights violation, you know, as President Maduro correctly said, here's an executive order to claim 7-9 leaders in Venezuela who are protecting their sovereignty, who are protecting and defending their elected government. And yet here what we've gotten over the last 3 years, when there's been heightened demands on President Obama to end really literally the war on the black community and the black nation, you see, as President Maduro also pointed out, that over the last year, the president has had over 105 press statements about Venezuela and defending reactionary dissident voices against the government of Venezuela. I think in many ways it has been laying the ground, as they've spent over $200 million over the last 15 years to try to overthrow this important experiment in Latin America for real sovereignty, for building a new form of socialism in Venezuela and throughout Latin America.
Well, we've asked some of the people and our friends to tweet. We have one here from Channing Martinez, who's an organizer with the Strategy Center. It says, I'm more scared of being killed by my local police than I would ever be by a country fighting the U.S. government for sovereignty. Right on, Channing. And I think one of the things that's interesting about this, Manuel, is that we are organizing a No Cars in L.A., No Tanks in L.A. campaign. We are going to be calling on the listeners in Voices to ask President Obama to stop the U.S. war on the black nation, to stop the U.S. war on the planet. One thing I think is really interesting and great is that as the United States does interfere in the internal affairs of countries all over the world, it's giving them more credibility to discuss the internal affairs of the United States. So I think, just like Chairman Mao issued a statement in support of the Afro-American people that had a tremendous effect, I think we want to put out that the Venezuelan government has charged the U.S. government with hypocrisy on the issue of human rights, and in particular, the mass repression and incarceration of Afro-descendant communities in the U.S. So I think that the more that the United States tries to pressure Venezuela, the more that we want to talk about Venezuela's support for Afro-American people inside the United States when the President of the United States does not support that right.
Exactly. I mean, I think the origins of this attack on Venezuela are 15, 16 years old. In reality, this happened in April of 2014 when there was an outright coup against the government of Maduro, where forces took to the streets with these forces called the Guarimbas. There were like basically violent outbreaks that were playing out throughout Venezuela. And the origins of why these people have been targeted right now, many of these people are military officials, many of them are DAs who are, you know, holding those who were responsible for leading this coup and these sort of violent outbreaks in Venezuela. And you could say the same thing here, where why isn't President Obama really stood for the people in Ferguson and ended the 1033 program, this Department of Defense program that is arming to the teeth the police forces around the country? Why haven't we taken on a real ability to shift a lot of the resources that they're putting out on arming more police in the streets to better and improve our communities? And I do think that in many ways this will give an opportunity to really uplift not only the struggles that are happening here, but also to really name out the hypocrisy of what the United States is trying to do all over the world.
Well, I think one of the things that we should really talk about in terms of building a Black-Latino alliance in this particular case, obviously the leadership of the Black nation, but also tremendous opportunity for people working in the Latino community to have really great conversations about Cuba, about Venezuela. I mean, here's a quote from, again, from Postcards from the Revolution, Ava Gollinger. You should really check her out. She's pretty brilliant. This is talking about the change in Cuban policy. She wrote, "There's no question this event marks a profound change in U.S.-Cuba relations and U.S. relations with Latin America. It's a major victory for the Cuban Revolution, Fidel and Raul Castro, and the Cuban people. Over the past 15 years, Washington has lost its influence in Latin America, and the region has shifted significantly towards the left, with socialist presidents in a majority of countries and new regional organizations that exclude the United States and Canada. With the Union of South American Nations, UNASUR, the Bolivarian Alliance of the Peoples of Our America, ALBA, and the Community of Latin America and Caribbean States, CELAC, Latin America has become more integrated, sovereign, want to keep discussing that, independent and powerful than ever before. The region has forged relations with China, Russia, Iran, and other sovereign states." I just want to keep talking about sovereignty. "With strong markets and technological know-how, development has excelled, and with few exceptions, Latin American economies are on the rise. All this has been achieved without the United States." This is still Eva Gollinger from Postcards from the Revolution. "In response, Washington amped up its interference in the region, supporting coups and attempted coups against democratically elected presidents in Venezuela, Haiti, Bolivia, Honduras, Ecuador, and Paraguay, increasing its military presence in the hemisphere, and intensifying subversive efforts to undermine Latin American governments through multi-million-dollar funding of opposition movements. These actions isolated Washington even more in the region and were rejected unanimously by all Latin American governments, even those on the right. A growing sentiment of Patria Grande, the great homeland, has taken root in the region and only appears to get stronger every year." Pretty amazing stuff. We'll get to Obama in a minute, but since they keep talking about the Bolivarian Revolution, obviously Simón Bolívar must be very happy today when he sees there's a growing sentiment of Patria Grande. Why don't you tell some of our listeners about why did they use the term Bolivarian Revolution?
Yeah, as you know, the movement gave rise to Hugo Chavez's presidency and a lot of the move toward the government toward ending neoliberalism in Venezuela and their experiment toward building socialism in Venezuela was based on the idea of defending the sovereignty of Venezuela, because in many ways Venezuela had always been sort of a neo-colony of the United States for roughly 75 years. Once the U.S. discovered oil in the region, it has always been sort of the back door of the United States access to not only just one of their most richest natural resources, but in many ways was a government that was always supporting the United States in many of the sort of evil things that they were doing throughout Latin America. And so the idea of Bolivar, who was the liberator of much of South American countries and supporting the independence movements against Spain in the 19th century, the idea of building one vision, one America, one America, one, you know, patria grande, meaning, you know, not only at that early phase of even U.S. dominance, Bolivar had already named the U.S. as a main threat, that in the name of democracy, that they would try to basically overrun the region to control their own needs. Chavez used not only Bolivar's words and actions to really promote the type of revolutionary change that he promoted in Venezuela, but that, of course, has caught prairie fire throughout Bolivia and Ecuador and much of the region and much of the most important institutions, as Eva Golinger was laying out, the institutions that they built, like Petrocaribe, which basically has creates a new form of exchange for petroleum for much of the Caribbean nations who, again, have been small island nations with not their own those type of natural resources, and they're able to get petroleum at a much higher rate. The creation of ALBA, which is, again, another important sort of unification of a lot of left socialist governments throughout Latin America to create a sort of an important both not only trading bloc, but as an important also really unification of building a lot more unity within all those governments. And, of course, now contrast for many years where the United States was able to use the Organization of American States, which was always a U.S. sort of front to support whatever coup or whatever sort of maneuvers that they had in the region. Now many of the countries throughout Latin America and the Caribbean have unified under UNISUR, which is, again, a new format that, again, excludes the United States, where the United States is not part of that, so they can sort of embrace more of their and move forward with their sovereignty.
Well, the voice you're hearing is Manuel Criollo. He's Director of Organizing of the Labor Community Strategy Center. A lot of you who have been fighting against the police state in Los Angeles certainly know him. He's been the lead organizer of the entire campaign to get rid of the truancy tickets in the public schools of Los Angeles, taking on the Los Angeles Police Department, Los Angeles School Police Department, winning a lot of victories, helping to produce black, brown, and over-policed. And one of the things that's interesting is that what's strange is that, to me, is this whole concept of public intellectuals, which are people without a base but who have lots of opinions. And it's really great to hear a working-class intellectual from the base who's an organizer and also my leading analyst, I mean, on Latin America, the person who teaches me the most. So it's great to have you on the show. And this is what I want to do to our listeners. We are going to go to the phones, 818-985-5735, at about 3:45. But you can start lining up now, 818-985-5735. I also want to make sure that you're listening to Strategy Sessions, which is we're on Tuesday at 4. Antonio Gonzalez is on Monday at 4 in the same slot. He's down in Venezuela now. He's going to be on Ian Masters at 5 o'clock on Thursday. He's going to be on Ian's show. So I want you to call us at 818-985-5735 to talk about Hands Off Venezuela. In particular, if there are people in the audience who have been doing solidarity work with the people of Latin America, who have been trying to keep the United States out of Latin America, or who've been fighting in the Black Liberation Movement or any kind of movement, we'd love to hear from you. 818-985-5735. We're going to go to the phones in about 5 minutes. Manuel, I want to ask you a particular question, which is, given what Eva Golinger correctly talked about, which is the growing isolation of the United States, what would motivate Obama to take what's in many ways a verbally aggressive, you know, setting the stage for something much worse? I don't get the time, place, and conditions of this.
Well, I mean, I think in many ways it's been building up. And as Eva Gollinger laid out, I think they see that there is obviously been a lot of shortage of foods in Venezuela over the last 2 or 3 years. That has, you know, economically, as you know, also because there has been the falling prices of oil, right?
That's right.
Has also then reduced the types of subsidies that the government can provide. You know, with the food shortages, you know, many analysts have talked about how, again, many of the big capitalists in Venezuela have created that crisis, not just the crisis of the system itself, but it's the system that they're the ones that are hoarding the food to not release that food to be sold to the public. I think that has a lot to do with it. And that Maduro, of course, while he won, right, he did not win with the sort of numbers that Hugo Chavez would have won if he would have been in power. And so I think they perceive a certain time period to try to attack the process that's going in Venezuela. But I also think it is a sign of desperation, because right now there's a big key peace accord in Colombia that might happen, that and that in many ways also Colombia has shifted their posture toward Latin America, where Uribe was very aggressive in support of U.S. sort of policies. He has taken a back seat to really address a lot of the internal things that are happening in Colombia, and the potential peace accord that, you know, again, the Cuban government is working with the Colombian government to get to an agreement there. I think they see a momentary lapse of where there is some weaknesses and pockets of potential weaknesses in the government that they're trying to take advantage of.
Well, it's very helpful, and we're going to go to the phones in about 3 or 4 minutes, 818-985-5735. We have a couple of callers already. We have Alex Covina, we have Habu, and we're going to get to both of you and other calls, 818-985. I want to end with something I've been thinking about a lot, which is that there's a lot of discussion in the United States about a so-called democratic socialism, and a lot of people have been arming themselves with the terms, how democratic they are, and talking about the problems of state socialism, the problems of, you know, talking about 21st century socialism in the United States without relating it to 21st century socialism the way Chavez used it. So I just want to take a minute on that obviously the Cuban people, the Venezuelan people, would love to have the most fully democratic, whatever that means, open societies, as it was, you know, to reduce the role of the police, reduce the role of the armed forces. But if you have the United States government actually subverting your own government, if you have the United States government passing bills and giving money, if you have the President of the United States, every time you have an economic crisis, arming the capitalists inside your country, it is going to lead to a greater state dictatorship, if necessary, to protect the revolution, which I would support. And I think anybody in Venezuela would say, if that's the choice, if that's what it's going to take to protect our sovereignty against the U.S. aggression. So it's very hypocritical for a lot of people in the United States to talk about what's the problem with the Soviet Union, what's the problem with China. The problem with those countries is the United States. And it's been U.S. aggression from the very beginning of the Russian Revolution that has created the need for a particular form of an armed state to protect itself, not just from external aggression, but sadly, from the role of capitalists inside their own country. Now, the capitalists have the right to organize politically, but if they're in line with a foreign power, as the United States likes to say, they may have some of their civil rights and civil liberties, quote, curtailed. And I say that's the decision of the Venezuelan people. But we in the United States should not be sitting there judging how democratic they are when there's 2.5 million people in prison in the United States, and when the United States is the greatest aggressor in the world. So I just want to say, for those of us on the left, we have to be very careful about the anti-communism in the movement, the sense of superiority to third world countries, the chauvinism in the movement of charging everybody's revolution except the one we can't make. So I just think it's really important to have a sense of humility and also a sense of terror, if I may say, about what are we going to do to stop our own government? What are we going to do about the United States? So in that context, I do want to go to the phones at 818-985-5735. We'd love to hear your calls. Stan, who do we got? Is that Alex? Can we get Alex and Covina? 818-985-57. Hey, Alex, how you doing? Welcome to Voices from the Frontlines with Eric Mann and Manuel Criollo.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
What's on your mind?
Well, really, like, hearing what's going on recently with what the president said about Venezuela, and then, again, what the Republicans, 47 Republicans, did with Iran. And it really brings up a picture of the America being like a four-year-old child who likes to race, but only likes to race when they win, you know? And when they don't win, they're kind of like crying out that somebody's cheating. So and anybody that defends that is kind of like, where are you coming from, man? Like, and we talk about the more people being in prison today than people were in slavery back in the day. And then we go on before that, how the U.S. started with its own genocide, right? And the human violations that, and how that's still not being addressed.
Well, I think I'm sorry, I interrupted. I want to respond and still hear a comment mm-hmm. from you. I think that's right, and I think one of the things that you're raising is that when the United States attacks other countries, this is a chance for us to talk even more about what's going on inside the United States. Have you been involved in any kind of movements?
Yeah, I'm a community organizer, and right now what I'm really focusing is back into the youth of my area, right? And our age group I'm 25, my age group from 16 to 24, we really have no options coming out of high school, right? And we have so many distractions. But when we tell them the truth, when we tell them about, look, do you know what the school-to-prison pipeline is? Their eyes open up wide. Is that why he got locked up? Is that why my brother's in jail? Is that why my cousin is no longer here? You know? If the older heads go back to the young people who are in high school right now, if we find our way, not necessarily teaching, where our mouths are covered with our paychecks, right? But if we're able to find our way into the school system without being restricted, and being able to really address these issues with the young people, oh, man, we're going to be having a big thing on our hands.
Well, Alex, I'm going to put out Manuel to respond as well. He's doing similar organizing. I hope you would send me your information, Eric at Voices from the Frontlines. We're really happy when organizers call. You're really the heart and soul of the show. If you send me your email, I'll send you some stuff back, and let's stay in touch and let's keep working together.
That sounds great. Eric Mann at, could you say that one more time?
Sure, it's Eric at voicesfromthefrontlines.com. Eric?
Okay.
And Manuel, what are you thinking?
Alex, I mean, likewise. Nice to meet you, man, and I think you're right. I think that much of the work that we've been doing over the last 10 years has been to really attack what we perceive as the most genocidal policy of the United States, which is the creation of a prison boom system that is there to destroy and lock up our people. And I think it's important work that needs to be done that has so many, it's almost like an octopus, just like the system of imperialism is. It's many ways, it's an octopus not only externally and out in the world, but internally more importantly, and that the worst part of the way that oppression happens today for many of our people is the taking away of their mind. And I think that is an important struggle to be had. So it's great. I'm hoping that we can connect.
Hey, so this is what Voices from the Frontlines is trying to do. Alex, thanks so much for your call. Habu, what's up? Are you from Wisconsin, my brother? Is that true?
Right. I'm right in Madison, Wisconsin.
We're happy to hear from you. Tell us. Talk to us.
Yeah, sure. Good to listen to what you've been saying. But, you know, let me just say, somebody mentioned, you know, how could Obama... Well, I should say President Obama, do what he's done to Venezuela, meaning, you know, say what he said yesterday. You know, are you kidding? I mean, you know, Obama carpet-bombed Libya, and now he's bombing Syria and also Iraq. You know, they can't stand to stay out of Iraq, meaning Iraqis didn't want them there, but they're still going back in. So, you know, don't think because Obama is a minority in skin color that he shares those kinds of values. He would have never gotten to the top job if he really shared values of ordinary people. But let me just get back to
Venezuela. Well, yeah, this is good. Make your point and want to hear from you, and then I have another listener. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll be very brief. Don't worry. You know, just one other thing besides I get to my point. You mentioned something about that colleague of yours at KPFK. You know, he's the most reactionary person. I don't even know how a Pacifica station carries that kind of piffle coming from that reactionary guy. But anyway, I won't even give him the satisfaction of using his name.
Well, I'm going to hold you there. Let me hold you there. I appreciate both of your points. Very happy you called in from Wisconsin. But let me say this. Ian Masters is a person of strong opinions. There's a lot of people who disagree with some of the things he said. He runs a great show. He has a point of view. That's the, what we ask people to do is, if we're going to build a broad united front on the left, if we can't even respect and appreciate, Ian and I would debate a lot of things, but man, the guy has very good production values, very good guests, and if you don't like his politics, that means he has politics, which is what we want. So I hear what you say, but I'm sure there's a lot of people going to call in Ian's show and say, man, that Eric Mann drives me crazy. So you're on Voices from the Front Lines. That's what makes KPFK great. And we want really good shows with good listeners. And thank you for the call from Wisconsin. Nancy in West LA, what's up with you? You're on Voices from the Front Lines.
I'm glad you brought up that thing about hypocrisy on the U.S. left about democratic socialism. You know, I consider myself an eco-socialist anyhow. But I think there's much more democracy, spotted the fact that they had to deal with their own internal capitalists, not to mention the U.S. empire. They're much more democratic and some of these pink-tie countries. They outlaw the death penalty in these countries. And look what's happening here. Everybody gets in prison for even opening their mouths.
Well, Nancy, this is great. This is Nancy Lawrence. I don't mean to out you, but a really fine, dedicated, long-time organizer. And you've always, you know, we've always tried to support the third world, both inside and outside the United States. And I think if in the black and Latino community, I think there's a lot more seeing through the hypocrisy of the Obama administration and seeing through what imperialism looks like. So I think one of the things I got out of Ava Gollinger's statement is that this has a risk on the Obama administration's. You know, there's going to be consequences. Upsides, what Manuel talked about, what they think they're doing, but downsides about the possibility of even greater isolation in Latin America. You have one more point you want to raise, Nancy? Because I have another. Now the phones are lighting up.
You can go on to others.
Thanks, Nancy. Oh, it's always great to have you.
Okay.
Hey, Danny from Downey, what's up? You're on with Voices from the Frontlines, Eric Mann, Manuel Criollo. Manuel, you respond to this call. Danny, you still around?
Yes, I'm still here. Yeah, I just thinking about the Buffalo Soldier is in the front line again. This time it's attacking Venezuela, Mr. Obama. My question is, Eric, is what role should diplomacy play in this, in such situation? How should Cuba react to this attack on Venezuela? Should Cuba continue with the negotiations, which I think they should? However, the situation is not the optimal situation at this time to continue such agreements or trying to get better relations with the United States at this time.
That's a good question. I'll let Manuel Criollo respond to you.
Sure.
And thanks. That's a very good question. We're really happy you called. Go ahead, Manuel.
Yeah, I think that obviously there has already been a response from many of the key leaders of UNISUR. Again, it's the new unified sort of South American alliance that exists that does not include the U.S. So I know they're already talking about a meeting to respond to this recent executive order. I know that even as we speak, there has been actually representatives from Ecuador and Brazil that are meeting with some of the opposition forces in Venezuela, with the Venezuelan government supporting those, to try to bridge those conversations about what is happening. I think, you know, this is the irony or the deep sadness of this situation is that this comes almost at the second anniversary of Chavez's death. And I don't think we can really fathom what a huge loss that is for the entire humanity in many ways, and of course for the Venezuelan Revolution. When you think about the things that he was doing, the alliances that he had been building throughout the Caribbean, the alliances that he's been building throughout Latin America, the alliances that he's actually been building with Africa. There's actually a real great film right now talking about one of the last meetings that Chavez was able to put together where it was called South American African Exchange, again, and where he was raising the U.S.'s own interest in Africa for much of the natural resources. So I do think that in many ways there's going to be a political response from many of the forces in Latin America who are pretty clear that this is a violation of sovereignty, of sovereign nation. And even in relationship with Cuba, you know, today there was an important statement from the Cuban government, again, as always, in support of the Venezuelan government.
Wow. We have only 1 minute left. I'd rather give it to Morris than me. Morris from Long Beach, are you on? Can you get 1 minute in?
Yes. Good afternoon, everybody. In my opinion, the biggest problem that the United States has with Venezuela is that they are nationalizing their resources. And any country that nationalizes their resources is going to have a problem with our country. We have a problem with Iran dating back to 1953 when the CIA and British Petroleum invaded Iran because they nationalized their resources. You got Lumumba in the Congo. He nationalized his resources. He's dead. So just take a look at how folks are treating their resources, and then you'll find out if you get a visit from us or not. Thank you very much.
Brilliant, and I want to end with another discussion about the role of the state in third world countries. That when I've been studying about what the overthrow of Lumumba, I've been studying about the overthrow of all these governments, the biggest problem is they didn't have a strong enough state to keep out the United States, to keep out the Belgians. They nationalized it, but Mossadegh was overthrown. So again, if we really believe in third world revolutions, we better believe in their right to defend their revolutions, to have armies, to have police, and to use the state in defense of a people's revolution. And any efforts to deny that as quote undemocratic, well, hang around with Mr. Obama and the two of you can criticize everybody. With that, this is Voices from the Frontlines. I hope you've enjoyed the show. This is Eric Mann. Thanks, Manuel Criollo. It's great to always work with you. I want to thank G. I want to thank Stan for doing the phones. And our listeners, man, you guys are great. If I could only get you to email, darn it, you're amazing on the phone. So Eric at Voices from the Frontlines, just humor me. Send me an email. Bye.